This is File 27, Cycle 3. Today's date is March 16th, 2018. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Emmerich Harney, Alex's brother. And he's going to talk about his first experiences in the Harney Fine Tea Company, the shop that he runs at Soho, New York, and he's going to talk about the podcasts that he and his brother have started. But first, we'll start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
My name is Emmerich Harney. Emmerich Paul Warman Harney.
Emmerich Paul, in the middle?
Is Warmuth Harney.
And how do you spell it, please?
W-A-R-M-U-T-H.
And that's a family name.
This is my grandmother's side, yes. My paternal grandmother's side.
Okay. Wonderful. And your birth date?
Is March 9th, 1987.
Happy birthday, belatedly.
Thank you.
And your birthplace?
I was born in Chicago, Illinois, at Northwestern Hospital.
And your parents' names?
It is Michael Lee Harney and Brigitte Anguille.
Thank you, because I didn't know how to pronounce it. And your siblings?
I have an older brother, Alexander Antoine Harney, and a younger brother, Bertram Bresse Harney.
Bertram?
Bresse, B-R-E-Y-S-S-E.
B-R-E-Y-S-S-E. The Antoine I can spell. And how and when did you come to this area?
I believe it was in the summer of 1988 that my father moved us from Chicago to Lakeville, Salisbury area. So at that point I was only a year and a half old. Didn't really have much say in the matter.
No.
And I don't have, from the move, I don't have any major recollections. I do know that my parents bought the place on Sharon Road, just halfway up the hill, across from the Lions, the Lion Club, where they do the lobsters and things like that. St. Mary's.
Oh, it was Baylor Sudan's house.
Perhaps.
Yes, 34.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
You are the historian, so.
I had his kids in school. All right. What's your earliest memory of the tea company, what you did?
My very first memory, and I think the reason I remember it the most is just because people have told me a lot about it, is just being a toddler and sitting on top of a countertop in the garage of my grandparents' house, 11 East Main Street, and just peeling off stickers and handing them off to Sally to put onto the tins. And I think I must have been 3 or 4 at that point. Toehead, blonde,
yep.
White hair.
Yep.
Ridiculous.
Useful!
You can find me!
Yes! Oh, yes! Oh, my word. That's a wonderful story. When did you start working at Brook Street in the store?
I would say I think I was 11 or 12 years old when I started working at Brook Street. Really, my parents were adamant that Alex and I...
Do something,
but not only do something, because I worked at the Grove or, but
yeah.
It didn't suit what I was interested in. Mm. I think I was... I liked playing sports, but in the end, I was still kind of an indoor kid.
Yeah, but that's all right, too. That's all
and
right,
And so... You know, it was also a little bit less rigorous work working for my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, I was ringing people out at the cash register and, of course, doing tastings. The Brook Street store, I think it only had like 50 teas at that point.
I think that's what your mom said.
Yeah, because it was 2 walls of 25, I think.
Okay. And you did gift wrap.
We did do gift wrapping. My mother is very...
Particular?
Meticulous, particular, all sorts of different adjectives about doing it well, and I think that she instilled that in me.
That's good.
Yeah.
Attention to detail is good.
Yes.
I wish I were better at it.
In math, my biggest weakness, though, was always, I would always rush through the problem without reading all of the parts of it, and then, half of the work would be right, and then at the end, the teacher's like, but you didn't get the Latin, like, you didn't do part B.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So.
Okay. I understand
so
that.
So the gift wrap is nice for that. It certainly, you have to look at all the creases and make sure everything looks nice and centered, and so, yeah.
It's a gift. It's a talent.
It's unfortunate, though, that it's changed. I don't know if it's from cost purposes or what. My mom used to melt wax and do the stamp and everything.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was so charming. And
yep.
I think it just in the, also the capacity in which we're gift wrapping now, the sheer number, we can't do it. It's not inexpensive. People burn themselves. So it's still fun. It's just... It's not
different.
As charming.
Yeah, well, sometimes we lose things, I'm afraid, in the rush to get things accomplished.
Right.
Or the volume.
Yes.
Now, you moved over to Railroad Plaza in 2005.
Yes.
And did you continue to help over there?
In 2005, I did not. 2005 was when I graduated from Salisbury Boys School.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I must have chipped in.
Yeah, but you weren't on a regular basis.
I had, at that point, I went on to University of Vermont.
Oh, good.
But I was only there for half a year, and then came home upset with the school, social life, whatever, you know, teenage angst.
That's why a gap year is important.
It is. Unfortunately, I took many more gap years, but...
That's all right. It's called life experience.
Yeah, I came home that second semester, and... Went with my father out to the Fancy Food Show in San Francisco. So that was the winter of 2006. And we ended up driving down the coast after the show because I was kind of interested in acting and whatnot. So I was interested in L.A. So we drove down. Of course, I was the designated driver because I was only 18, which was fine. He got to enjoy some nice wines, and he's certainly that type of person. I ended up moving out to Los Angeles that March, and I was there for a good chunk of the time. I mean, I came back, I think, in November. Social angst, and being gay and having come out at 15 was certainly great, but then still trying to find myself.
It's difficult.
It's
for
certainly...
For anybody.
Yeah.
Gay, straight, transgender, it's very hard.
So, I found a group of friends, fell out with a group of friends, didn't want to be there anymore, came home in tears. And then I came back to the area and was at Northwestern Community College in Winsted for a year. I think my parents were very concerned that staying here was not a good thing for me. So my dad was encouraging me to continue to look out, to do something. And so I actually applied to the American University of Paris and... began there in the fall of 2007, where I studied fashion and journalism.
Oh, good.
And of course, was just continuing to figure out what I was wanting to be interested in, or, pursue, because I was interested in so many things.
Yeah, and that's more of a problem than somebody that might, like myself, I knew I wanted to be a teacher. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
No question. That was what I wanted to be. And if you've got so many choices and you're good at so many things... It's more difficult.
It's crippling sometimes.
It can be.
There's a great quote, and I can't remember it, by somebody who's talking about, how crippling it can be, all the opportunities,
mm-hmm.
I wish I knew the quote, but...
That's all right.
I'll think of it, and I'll get it to you.
Wonderful, and I'll put it in.
And so, then I was in Paris for a year, but developed a bit of a skin... It was a benign tumor, but a tumor. So came home, and that was in the summer of 2008. And so that's when I began to work with my father, went on a trip to China, took some photos. I fancied myself good at photography at that point after having worked in fashion in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
A little chip on my shoulder for that. and just fell in love. And that's where I really think that as an adult, I started to fall in love with tea. Because, in high school, I worked on the weekends at Brook Street. I developed some teas here and there, in my mid-teens. Actually, all of them are still around today. There's the Soho blend, the White Christmas, and the Apple Cinnamon, Matcha Irigen Maicha. And they do well, which is nice. And that part of tea I liked. But it wasn't until going to China and meeting the farmer, smelling the tea firsthand, that all of it all just came together.
And you had the maturity at that point where it could come together. Well, it takes time. Not everybody develops at the same rate.
Yeah.
I was born old. You know.
I'm a Pisces. I'm supposed to be born old, too, you know.
Sorry. I'm Cancer. Or a crab. But it all melds. Mm-hmm. All of your experiences will help you focus on what it is that you really are.
Absolutely. I don't think that I could be as successful as I was in Soho and where I am today in marketing for the company.
Because a lot of it, I learned marketing from Pauline Simmering at Pauline's Place. Mm-hmm. It was not a field that I knew anything about. And a lot of it is creative. It's fashion in a way. It's trending.
Yeah.
And it's being very au courant.
Yeah.
And you have to have a background in that.
Mm-hmm.
And it all of the experiences that you went through have helped form the adult that you are now and focusing you on the things that you really are passionate about.
Right.
And the Soho store, which I do want to get to.
We're almost there.
Almost there. Okay. Keep going. This is great.
And so when I came back from China, then, you know, exploring with Mike about what a stronger relationship with the company could be for me. And so he was obviously at that point he was interested in opening a branch in the city, but mm-hmm. I don't think he was confident yet in my ability. So he wanted me to spend more time with my mom, understudying with her and her mm-hmm. assistant mm-hmm. manager, Sarah Stevens at the time. And so that's what I did. So for the year back from Paris, I just worked at the shop, went to the shows with her, went to some management training. And then, really, in early 2009, or late 2009, I would say, we started really looking for spaces. And eventually we found 433 Broome Street. We were working with...
Say that again, Chloe.
Sorry. We found 433 Broome Street.
And is it with an E?
Yes, at the end. Which, interestingly enough, if you look into the history of Broome Street, Mr. Broome was actually an importer of tea.
Yeah.
So that rings true for us.
Perfect location.
Yeah.
And this is in Soho.
Mm-hmm.
And Soho is...
So it's on the lower portion of the island. It's possibly in the lower fifth of the island, if I had to divide it.
Makes sense.
And it's really nice because when you exit the store and walk half the block to your left, you're in bustling Broadway, where all the big stores are. And then if you go to the right half block, it's just one of those tiny cobblestone streets, and it's quiet, and it's a nice mixture, you know, like we're not far off the beaten path. It's a great destination. We had been working with a realtor, and a lot of the places we were looking at were just, it didn't have the two floors that we needed for storage, it didn't have the right vibe, the price was too high, and then all of a sudden this was just like, you know, for rent by owner. And we called up, and it was really nice, and it worked out well for us. So we signed the lease in the end of May, so June 1st of 2010, and thus began our partnership with Poesis, where we designed the store with them. And it was a pretty rigorous process.
Oh, it would be.
I had gone through thousands of resumes. I had interviewed over 700 employees, really just to try to get a sense of who we could get for the store to be representative. And so, you know, that was, you know, throughout the summer, I was basically I wasn't the general contractor, but I was there overseeing them, you know, to make sure everything was done well.
Okay.
So that was June, July, August, September. October was when I was doing all the training and the interviewing, and we brought them up here to meet the family, do the tour of the factory, see the whole thing.
What a wonderful process, though. Because then they really understood what they were representing.
Yeah. Well, they met Papa John.
Yeah.
They met Zazie. They got to see the factory and all the inner workings. It's a challenge now to continue to get to do that. Turnover might be high, you know.
Well, and talking with your mom... Her employees come first. Employees first, customer second. And if you treat your employees well, they will stay.
Yeah.
It just makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, if you're happy in your job and you're getting a decent salary, which she was very insistent, people get a decent salary, they'll stay.
Yeah.
And it's not really any different in the city than it is in the country.
Just harder to get them to the factory.
True, true.
Longer train ride.
2,500 square feet?
2,500 square feet on the top floor, 2,500 square feet on the bottom floor. The bottom we use for the offices and for all of the storage. We have more room, obviously, than my mom. I believe the front of house for the Millerton shop is 1,700 square feet. So it is significantly smaller. And shelf and is also, as you know, the ceilings are quite low, whereas my ceilings go 15 feet up. So I have a lot more shelf space. Unfortunately for our tiny tourists, they have to ask for assistance sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But that's okay.
It's difficult being short.
Yeah.
How many teas do you taste down there? I mean,
we do the full spread, so there's close to, I think, over 300. We have, when you walk in, we have our cash register, we have the tasting bar, so it's a complimentary tasting per person.
How many tastings can you have?
So we do one per person. If you come with friends, we always encourage people to come in larger groups, because for us, tea is a personal experience. We rather than letting people purchase for the longest time, we wanted to encourage them to come with friends, to talk about the tea that they're tasting, and to have a good time. But, you know, we kind of bowed recently down to requests and just recently started offering that ability for people to purchase. And then in the back, we had a little sit-down area where our main stay for that business is just tea and scones. You know, we've added things over the years, quiches and macaroons and cakes, but really when it comes down to it, people are just looking for a nice, simple place to enjoy a good pot of tea and a good scone.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have the clotted cream and the jam. And
you have to.
And so people really, you know, when we look at the numbers, it's like 80% of the cafe's business is tea and scones.
Yeah. But, you know, that's, they work together.
They do. No. And it's nice to be able to offer that, because we noticed when in Millerton that there's a symbiotic relationship between having a cafe and having the store, because people can, well, maybe while they're waiting for a table, they'll shop around.
Yeah.
If they've just shopped around, maybe they want to have a seat and relax and have another cup of what they really loved at the tasting bar. So it just goes to, sometimes the model's a little challenging. You know, we saw, like, for instance, a competitor, Starbucks, bought Teavana, and they tried to do the same, what we're doing.
Didn't work.
And it didn't work. You know, they closed down the stores.
Yeah.
But I think it's, if you can stick it out and try to make it work, maybe, you know, it can't be overly complicated, which is why tea and scones, I think, is great, because it's not complicated.
It's not complicated, and it's something that everybody can do.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a scone, you have the cottage cream, you have the jam, and it's simple.
Yeah.
And the flavors complement one another.
Absolutely. So we finally opened, it was November 16th was our soft, our official opening party. It was terrifying because that was a Monday, and the guys were supposed to come in on Sunday to do the floors.
Uh-oh.
And they messed them up. Oh my God, it was a nightmare.
I can't believe it.
But we were like, well, we can't, we've already made announcements, there's a party, we're like, we can't redo the floors now, so we're stuck with these floors. And so we opened, we had a great opening party. I think we had 300 people or something there. It was actually one of my favorite things about opening the store was when we had, like, you know, the paper on the windows, and we had a PR firm that had picked the Wall Street Journal for our, they get the exclusive of the interview, the reveal, etc. And then I remember being like on the phone talking to Florence Fabricant over at the New York Times, and she was trying to figure out what our address was, and she had an inkling, and she stopped by, and I told the staff, I was like, if you see this lady, come by. We're not here. We have no idea when we're opening. Like, it was just such like a weird moment to be fighting away press.
Yeah.
So I thought that was something that was really, I never thought that that would be where we would, I was like, no, we should just tell everybody when we're opening. We want everybody to know. But we had the exclusive with the Wall Street Journal, so that was...
Well, that was good. And it was November 16th, 2010?
Yes. And then the first official day of business was the 17th.
Did you get the floors fixed?
We still haven't. Honestly, they weathered really well in the end. So what happened was, it was like, it was supposed to be a dark stain on wood, and it ended up being paint.
Ah.
So you really couldn't appreciate the texture of the wood.
You didn't get the grain.
You didn't.
No.
And at this point now, it's just become almost, it's like washed because of all the scuff marks.
Sure.
It, you know, it actually has this really nice natural
patina.
Yeah. No, so it's okay.
It works. It works.
You
okay.
know, our lease is up in 2 years, and honestly, I don't know what we're doing. But
oh, that's down the road.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it should be something we should talk about, but, you know.
I'll put it off as long as possible.
But it's been great because Soho's always seen growth year after year, really great growth, and it's been great to have a more metropolitan, accessible location because we are distributed in almost 50 countries internationally. People want to be able to bring back souvenirs, and they want to shop, and so it's a great way for us to engage with our customers.
Yeah.
So we're very proud to have it. I do hope that, you know, I hope that the landlord doesn't want to gouge us on the rent, because real estate has changed since 2010, so...
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're charging double or triple what we're paying currently, so, you know, that might not be tenable for us.
You
so
may we'll have to do some negotiations, but again, it's a business that's very viable.
Yeah. We have a decent, I would say, a fairly decent relationship with the landlord, so I don't foresee it being a major challenge, but he is in his late 70s, who knows what his plans are. If he wants to sell the building, or he wants to move, or he wants nobody there, who knows?
It's a discussion that will take place at the proper time.
And so just over the years, the retail side generally stayed the same. You know, we offer, much like my mom does, we have teapots and teaware and the tea. We do coasters and candles and just kind of like general lifestyle accessories that might complement a tea drinker. The cafe's changed a lot, I would say, more over the 8 to 7 years. And it, you know, it was just tea and scones, and then we added lunches. That became unmanageable. We went back down to just bringing in quiches and doing afternoon tea. That became unmanageable. And now we're just doing a fast casual type service. So you can still sit down. You can still get your cups of tea and scones and macaroons and cakes and sweets and things like that. But it's...
But not something that's going to take a lot of time to...
It just was, there's a lot of prep work. And I wanted my employees to be more engaged in tea and tea beverages. So whether it's a latte or just a standard tea, rather than table service, prepping quiches, making salads. You know, just...
Yeah.
It's not what I had them on board for in my whole, you know, my mind, so...
Do you have a general manager?
I do. Okay. So it was myself until just recently, and my new general manager is Jelani Stewart.
And that's, how do you spell Stewart?
S-T-E-W-A-R-T.
Okay. There's a couple of ways of spelling Stewart.
Yes, and he was one of my very first employees. He was of the first round. Mm-hmm. So he's been there since the very beginning, which... You know, I couldn't ask for anything better.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. My other manager that she just left in January was a girl, a woman who grew up with me here. We were neighbors since we were three. And she was with us, but then she got an amazing offer to do Hair the Musical in Germany. So, that's her passion.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah,
I could see that, and I'm sure you could too.
And again, you know, I had two people that supported me that I could trust, and that was major. So.
Oh, yeah. How many staff do you have total?
Right now we're sitting, I think, at 17 or 18.
Okay, that's quite a large staff.
Yeah. It's crazy, too, because, you know, we want to be, as my mom said, you know, compensating our staff for the knowledge that they have to hold, for the engagement and being an ambassador for us, for the customers. Mm-hmm. But it's for years, minimum wage did nothing. It just stood there. And so all of a sudden, we're trying to, you know, continue to be above it because that's what we want to have. But it's like all of a sudden, New York went from being, like, you know, the same minimum wage for the first 5 years of my shop being there, and all of a sudden it's increasing
tremendously.
Almost $2 in a year. It's crazy. So you know, we've had to adjust to that, and of course had to change our hours, change our offerings, to make it still a successful business.
Sure, because you got to make a profit.
The lights don't turn on, nobody can come in.
That's true.
So
have you thought about candles? And I'm assuming that you do trade shows for your material that you supply other than the tea.
Yes. We go to the New York International Gift Fair at the Javits Center twice a year. And it's a lot to walk.
Oh, yes!
You gotta wear some comfortable shoes.
I have had the pleasure of being there 3 times with Pauline when it was the International Jewelry Show. It was quite an experience for a country hick like me.
It's unfortunate, though, because I don't feel that it's been as good as it had been in previous years. I feel that people are mass-producing things, and I feel like, unfortunately, also our customers aren't interested necessarily in handmade products because they cost more. And so it's going to the show has been less effective as it used to be.
Yeah. So
we have our standards and our tried and trues, and then to find new things, it's harder.
Yeah, it is. The quality isn't there, and the care isn't always there either in manufacturing.
Yeah. Plus, everything's just so readily available. You know, is it on Amazon? Then why am I offering it? So it's a challenge.
It is a challenge. But you are a boutique or a niche that is not as prevalent as coffee.
Right.
So that it's more of a discerning clientele that you would have.
Yeah.
Are you running this store in Soho independently, or is it a branch of the family business?
It is a separate business.
Okay.
But it is a LLC where the members that are, not all the members, but some of the members that are Harney and Sons are the proprietors.
Okay.
So, yeah.
There's some family connections, but it's not...
Yeah, I mean, I know that my father, I believe other people are as well, are proprietors of it, but it is separate.
It is separate.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything that you'd like to add about the Soho store before we go on to the podcasts?
Not specifically, no.
Okay. I did my homework then. Now, the podcasts as the tea steeps. Where did the idea come from?
So, to continue a little bit about like the story from how I got from managing Soho to where I am today, I had started in, I think, 2014 editing our packaging and kind of trying to work that way. That happened as I moved up back up to Sharon, was commuting back to the city to manage Soho, and then just got more and more in involved in the marketing aspects of the company. And then in 2016, we had lost our marketing team, and that was when I was given the opportunity. I wasn't just given it. I actually really asked for it.
Good.
Because, you know, we had come back from a really nice family vacation. Mm-hmm. We were gone for a couple weeks, and it all just fell apart. And, you know, we were just kind of like, what is going to happen? And I just said, give me this opportunity. Like, I think I can do all of this. I will research what I don't know, and I will make it happen. And we got by for that first couple, you know, that first holiday season was really terrifying.
Well, let's go right.
Well, we switched to a brand new web platform in October, and it was, you know, it was an adjustment. And I've learned a lot about e-commerce and marketing since, which is great. And so in my research, you know, looking at forms of content in which, you know, we can engage with our customers. Because for the longest time, Harney & Sons was a great boutique business. We're making great teas. We're giving reasonable prices to our customers. You know, we had a decent marketing cadence. You know, we would do free shipping on orders over this. We would do percent off over this. Small curated, like, oh, it's, you know, it's orchard season, so here's this. But it wasn't a great marketing overall package.
Yeah.
We weren't putting out really much video. We weren't putting out much content for people to read. Our blog was stagnant. The travelogue was stagnant. And so I really wanted to make people want to come back to us for reasons beyond just wanting tea. Like, to be a source of information, tea-related, but maybe also tea-adjacent. And so in my research and looking at different ways that we could make interesting content for people, podcasts came up. And, you know, I listen to podcasts myself. Sometimes I think the ones that just go ongoing, like, I have a hard time keeping up with because all of a sudden I've got, like, 12 of them, and then I'm like, how can I listen to 12 hour-long episodes every week?
Yeah, right.
It becomes a hard time. So I was like, you know, and I don't want the responsibility of that. So I was, you know, I was like, but I think that creating something that is a small piece.
Yeah, little bites.
You know, like, it's our first step into it, and I think that that really appealed to me, and what also really appealed to me was that, you know, we've always done a little intro letter, and we've got little elements of our company history throughout products. You know, there's the Elise's blend for my grandmother, or there's the Eight of the Fort tea that my grandfather had done for the Fort restaurant in Colorado when they were having this big summit back in the Clinton administration. There's things here and there that mm-hmm. make us unique, mm-hmm. but there wasn't a total package that people could just be like, oh, this is why Harney & Sons is not Fordham & Mason. This is why Harney & Sons is not Upton or whoever else that, you know, like, this is what makes us us.
Right.
And you know, my grandmother is still around. She's got an amazing memory. And I was like, she has to be the one to really help us tell the story. And so we just kind of started thinking about who else could be a part of it. Obviously, Michael and Paul. Mm-hmm. My mom, we did interview. Unfortunately, my brother fed her a lot of... he helped finish her sentences, so it wasn't a great interview in the end.
He prompted too much.
Yes. You know... you can certainly feed a line, but you really need them to give it all back.
How did you get James Norwood Pratt?
So, that happened actually just serendipitously because he was coming back to us in August for a little week trip to celebrate. It was Papa John's birthday. And so he happened to be here, and I was like, this is... we have to pull the trigger. Like, we've been talking about it, you know, haphazardly, whatever. Yep. Let's make it happen. So we worked with Ashworth Creative out of Poughkeepsie. They helped us craft the questions and the arc of the story. And it actually also happened that the same week that Norwood was here, Marcus Wolfe was here.
Yes.
So it really just all came together perfectly.
Have you read James Pratt's Tea Lover Treasury?
Not any of their recent editions. I read the very first one.
I didn't expect it to be the history of tea.
Yeah,
I bought it and I'm reading it, and it's very interesting. I like history, obviously. Very interesting. Many different things. Of course, I drink tea, but I didn't know that much about it. And having listened to the podcast, made me want to buy the book.
Mm.
And each one of the podcasts is short, and it's different, but it archives the story of the company, which is, it may not be unique, but I think it is, because I don't know of any other company that's done it that way.
Right.
And it's current. And to have the actual people talking about how the company started makes it very, I'm going to use the word intimate.
Yeah.
It's not... third person. I'm third person.
Right.
Anybody that listens to this knows I'm third person. But you've got the actual people, and that's what I think makes it so unusual and so very, very well done.
Thank you.
It must take a long time to put it together, though.
It does take more time than I was expecting. I had wanted to actually launch these in November, and here we are starting them in late February. But, you know... I would say, originally, Ashworth had given me a quote for, I think, 15 hours to start, and that was for the questions and the first rounds of coming to listen to the interviews, and then, of course, then creating the arc for then the voiceovers, and I think we had to do an additional 2 bump ups of hours. So there was at least 40 to 50 hours of Ashworth's time. You know, each of the interviews took about 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we were recording in Stone Studio right across from Hotchkiss School.
Oh yeah,
Graham Stone. His dad is Monty Stone. You might know.
Mm-hmm. I know the name.
He, Monty Stone, plays piano, choral, I believe. He used to do, when we were at Salisbury, he would lead, you know, songs at, I don't even remember what we called it. It wasn't mass, but chapel.
Chapel.
Thank you.
Got it.
So each of the interviews were about 2 hours long. We had done the first interview with Norwood Pratt and my grandmother, and that obviously was broken up into 3 episodes, just because it was so content rich.
Oh, yeah.
We couldn't have just given it one.
No.
And then Michael had his own interview with us, Alex and I. We had done Paul, Marcus, and Mike together because really that's the start of the second generation. Mm-hmm. Marcus really worked. I feel like, you know, my father was largely responsible for increasing the breadth of teas that we have.
Yes.
But I think that Marcus was pivotal in that.
Mm-hmm.
If Marcus didn't introduce him and didn't take him on these trips, he may not have had the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was important. Unfortunately, Paul's daughter Tegan was very loud in that interview, so not all of it was usable. And then we had done my mom, like I said, and that unfortunately didn't get used. And then we did a second one with Paul, because also while we were interviewing Paul with Marcus, we came up with more questions we wanted to do, and we thought in our process that the interview process with two people engaging, or interacting together worked better than Alex and I interviewing one person.
Yeah.
Because there was a natural chemistry and cadence that could come out of it. And especially Paul and Elise, because they are of the second generation of the second generation.
Yeah.
And they get along well, and that humor is tangible, and people can appreciate it, and that, I think, was spectacular. So, I think that was 6 interviews?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, those were each 2 hours. Then Graham, of course, has done all of his editing, which I believe, you know, if you wanted to add it all up, I think it was close to 25, 30 hours.
Probably.
And then Alex and I both went back over to do voiceovers, which was about a half hour each, which was not terrible. The only challenge with that, I would say, is that basically, like, while we had read the script of what it was going to be that we were saying in the total package, it's very different when you're actually listening to the audio and then saying it. It was almost like a cold script read, which I applaud my brother, who has no necessarily acting background. He did a very good job, you know. Then after all the episode is done, we would go back through and do a 1 more hour-long listen-through, so that we would say, okay, this chronologically doesn't make sense, let's chop it, or can we re-record another piece to make it work? And we actually have 1 more session coming up on Monday for Paul's episode.
Good.
So on the 19th, and then the last episode of the podcast airs March 29th.
Okay, and that's season one.
That's season one. I'd love to do a season 2.
Okay.
But again, I think it's, you know, we've seen a lot of great response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had more downloads than I would have probably thought. And, you know, we do also have on the iTunes store, they have the ratings and reviews, and it's just been very nice to hear what people think about it. And,
good.
And it's all 5 stars, which is nice.
Good.
I think there was 1 4-star.
Oh, well.
Well, it you know, for some people, and this person, I don't blame them at all for what they were saying. It can be a little confusing. My grandmother name drops, and it's not like a famous name drop. She says, like, you know, the person who ran the inn was this person, and you're like, should I know this person? And it can get a little confusing, but I think that the latter half that is a little bit more current and less archival is definitely easier to digest. And
the more you do it, the better you get at it.
Absolutely. So it's been a great and fun process.
Where can they be viewed?
So for those that don't have necessarily smartphones or anything like that, it is their website, HarneyTeas, HARNEYTEAS .libsyn, and that's LIB as in boy, SYN as in Nancy .com. And otherwise, they are on iTunes Podcasts and Google Play.
Is there anything that you'd like to add about the podcasts before we close? He's shaking his head no.
No, sorry.
Thank you so much.
I forgot this is an audio.